Welcome to the Table Service Podcast, where we'll dish on all things support, success, and beyond with the people and companies building the future of customer experience. Table Service is presented by Tableau Consulting, and I'm your host, Jordan Hooker. Mark Hollis is a seasoned leader in building and scaling customer support teams from the ground up for high-growth healthcare technology startups like CityBlock Health, Collective Health, and Castlight Health. He brings a wealth of insights on creating customer support systems that scale with success. Today, Mark is here to talk about technology in the healthcare tech industry and its evolution over the last 20 years. Mark, welcome to the table.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you.
Would love to just take a moment for our listeners who may not be familiar with you to hear a little bit about your background. Let's hear the story.
For the last 14 years, my focus has been on primarily high-growth startups. I've been really fortunate. Starting in 2010, I joined Castlight Health, and I'll name just a few over those last 14 years. If we look at Castlight Health, Collective Health, CityBlock Health, those alone were sort of darlings of the healthcare tech industry. They each raised over $500 million in venture revenue. In CityBlock's case, they achieved several billion dollars in revenue, annual revenue, quite quickly. So I was really fortunate to be in San Francisco and New York with companies that had the resources both for talent recruitment for my teams and for the right tools that we could facilitate their success in service to the members. And I also growingly love to have that second audience, the clinicians that my teams are helping.
Yeah. So having, of course, been in the healthcare tech space for a very significant amount of time, so I'd love to hear a little bit about how technology has changed, particularly in terms of customer support, customer experience. What have you seen change in those 14 years of working in this space?
Certainly. If I may, I'm even going to tack a prequel onto that.
Yeah, please do.
Right before, because I think it tells a good story. Right before the health tech segment, I started out in 2000 with a startup in Tempe, Arizona. And their goal was to create a shop nationally and buy local tool. But the data and the infrastructure wasn't there. We didn't have Google. We didn't have that whole cloud mesh system. So it was ahead of its time. But in their research, I traveled to Silicon Valley and to Denver and to other places to look at product partners. We created a customer service product. And before things were cloud-based, the way we were as a startup able to win customers, Fortune 100 customers from large BPOs, was we were one of the first adopters of a software-based telephony switch. So I saw the evolution. I had been at a BPO called Affiliated Computer Services before this, where you had giant Avaya premise-based telephony that took telecom engineers to keep it up. If you needed a request made, even for a sequence change in your scripting, it took weeks. Well, now we had something, you know, that I could carry that sat in a server room. There was a black box called Interactive Intelligence. It started out premise-based, but it was software-based. And we were able to win most of, at that time, AT&T hadn't come back together. But SBC, which was like a $30 billion a year company and part of AT&T, took us on as a client to just do basic transactional third-party verification. And because of that technology shift, we were able to win and go from zero to handling about 55,000 calls a day. They were very short, just transactional calls. Mm-hmm. So I fell in love with the, even though I'm not an engineer or a product manager, with that kind of technology awareness and meeting with the engineers that were setting up for us business users in customer support. Mm-hmm. If you jump forward, I got an opportunity to work in San Francisco, and we were at Castlight Health. It was the first transparency healthcare shopping tool. So we sold to large employer groups, and once they were on, they were putting their employees for the first time on high deductible health plans. Mm-hmm. So there was skin in the game for both sides, but it was new territory and they needed to be educated for it to be even slightly fair because they were giving them a powerful resource. For the first time ever, a member of a Safeway grocery store, our first commercial client, could log on, and because of this technology, it would pull where they were in their benefit year with their spend. And based on that benefit structure, if they typed in MRI of the left knee with contrast, it could actually look at all their accumulators, where they were in their spend for that year, what their deductible design was, and it could give them an exact dollar amount for that out-of-pocket cost for that MRI at the hospital, at the facility across the street. And oftentimes it would be $1,500, $2,000 in price difference. Mm-hmm. And we also had a quality tool that could show you could save money and increase quality by shopping yourself. Mm-hmm. So it was very heady stuff. It was very exciting, but it was also so new and it wasn't perfect. It was nascent. So we had a member support team that I stood up from zero that were really advocates and navigators, as most healthcare startups still need to have. So we were interfacing constantly with product and engineering and customer success and implementation teams. And we went all the way from Safeway to spending 2 years to win Walmart's 900,000 eligible members that were on plans that we could service because of design. So that was my entry into healthcare tech. And it was just an amazing accumulation of talent. So many people, especially women from Castlight, have launched companies like Brightline Health. Naomi Allen has launched that. Alira Health. Dr. Dina Bravada was one of the co-founders of that. The list just went on and on of people launching from there. So I was fortunate enough as this customer service manager to get exposed to, for the first time, design people and product managers and doctors that needed our data from the support center and the technology. Kind of to your original question, we were also still using interactive intelligence. I had gone back to that first company and we were working through them to use interactive intelligence. And so right away we had complementary data points that the clinicians needed because they had their clinical work, their algorithms they could run, but they didn't know, is a 20-minute call material as far as quality outcomes? Or some people are saying it needs to be 50 minutes. We could help give them kind of the missing elements for that.
Sure.
So that was my starting point. I would like to jump up to Collective Health because they're and City Block, but that's my starting point.
It's very interesting to me to hear, you know, these perspectives on this technology that now, to me, seems very standard. I mean, if you have a benefit administration platform with you managing your benefits and your healthcare, your employees expect to be able to log in and see, where am I at with my deductibles? What will this procedure cost? Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that people, I think, now relatively take for granted. But we're talking technology. Yeah. It was not that far back when this was not available to us. So it's been very interesting to see that change and growth of that technology as we've moved now into this era of healthcare tech.
Right. Let's jump to Collective Health. And by the way, let me also say the relevance of what Castlight was doing for the first time. In 2013, before our IPO the following year, Gio, our founder, was interviewed with Stephen Brill for his Time cover piece called The Bitter Pill. And it talked about the opacity and the lack of transparency in the healthcare ecosystem. And to the point you said, yes, members can log on to their United Healthcare or their Aetna plan, but the shopping component is still sometimes missing. True. As far as actually being able to say, my out-of-pocket that I can shop for this procedure is going to be $180. So that's just a clarification I wanted to make.
True.
In 2014, some colleagues from Castlight introduced me to Collective Health. It sounded maybe boring at first because they were considered a TPA, a third-party administrator. Mm-hmm. But again, they were using technology to galvanize and supercharge what could be done. So here's the difference at Collective Health. We thought we would help small and medium-sized companies go from being fully insured to being self-insured, basically controlling their own budget as an insurance company, essentially. We were very surprised with out of the gate. Again, we started from zero and the technology helped us with this. We went out of the gate for employer groups like SpaceX, Activision, Blizzard, gaming company, Uber, Palantir. So they weren't huge traditional enterprise, but they were rapid growing new enterprise. And what was cool is their benefits leaders were just acquiring not only their own healthcare benefits, but they were first adopters of those third-party benefits like Livongo for diabetes management, Lyra for mental health. Again, things we might think of as standard now, but those employers were offering that to their employees. And so what we did, especially, yes, our navigators, our advocates at Collective Health could help navigate and explain the benefits. But what those clients also expected is for us to use our talent and our technology to help increase utilization of those other parties they were investing heavily in. Sure. So it started out with, let's just say, Activision Blizzard coming into San Francisco to Collective Health, meeting with my team and, of course, the other clinical and data teams. Mm-hmm. But for our team, they were looking for us at first to use our existing, and now we had moved into the cloud. We were using, at that time, we're experimenting with a sort of a nascent Atlassian product for ticketing. And we were still using interactive intelligence. And this was 2014 premise-based because our CTO was still leery about the reliability and redundancy of cloud-based telephony.
Sure.
And so Mercer and Activision Blizzard, as an example, would come in and they would say, okay, we want to know what are the indicators that we can have that will steer people without them even being able to formulate the question to get them to Livongo or to Lyra. So at first they would just shadow the advocates and see what they were doing. Of course, we had the WAV files and we had the video screen scrapes and they were also watching live. But what that led to is at first we trained our agents, if this subject matter is coming up, then you should recommend this other product and introduce them to it. Later, Collective Health, I believe, was able to patent and build an automated product that would basically key in on this and basically do the steering in the ticketing itself. So that was another exciting evolution, sort of pre-AI, of what we were able to do with healthcare technology that was in-house, starting anecdotally and then building the product ourselves, which was a lot of fun.
So from that time, I feel like, you know, as we're talking 2013, 2014, we've really seen an acceleration over the last 10 years of this technology. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with startups?
Definitely, it becomes a super hockey stick of acceleration. The CTO that I mentioned, a year later, I think, we happened to both meet in South Park and he was working with a startup. I was working with other. And he's like, hey, I love this cloud-based talk desk. It's incredible. I can do so many things. I know it's just something as a business owner, I can change things on the fly, create customized reporting without asking or any lift from engineering or our product. So again, we're still sort of in the past. Things are moving so fast, but that was a big change. I mean, here we had a brilliant, he was a NASA engineer before Collective Health, and now we're both loving pure cloud-based telephony and SMS and the integration of TalkDesk. Jumping a couple of years after that, each year there's this incredible gathering called CS Lab, Customer Service Lab, that's hosted by Conti, is her name, and she would always have sponsorship, usually by Zendesk and Salesforce, among others. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting, I brought some of my young managers with me because it was such a good professional experience to see all the guest speakers of what was new on the horizon. And I was whispering to some of the Zendesk people as their VP of product was up talking. I go, when are you guys going to get HIPAA certified so we can consider you as our CRM and ticketing? And I go, we're so excited. He's going to announce it here first, and it's going to go out as a press release later today. But we got our HIPAA, and now I know that sounds old school, but I think that was maybe 2015. It might have been a year or two earlier, but so many of us were waiting, because I think one of the things that's germane to this discussion is one of the changes that's happening is before the conversation was kind of capsuled. You had this standard, like, do we go with Salesforce, sort of the Chevy Impala at that time, you know, that did a little bit of everything and you could build it up, was super powerful. But Zendesk is on that rise, and we hear it's elegant, but, you know, maybe too light. And a lot of times the showstopper, in fact, we at first didn't use Zendesk at Collective when we were vetting with the team for almost a year. When they came in to present, it was like, we always hear of people moving from Zendesk to Salesforce as they scale, or from Sugar to Salesforce. We never hear the reverse. Well, I don't think that's true any longer. I think it's not just Zendesk, but there's so many incredible CRM products that now they're you know, they're bomb proof as far as their HIPAA and their PHI, their the depth of their API, you know, options are really deep. And they're just very flexible. The implementation times are so fast. The integration times are so quick. So now the problem is sort of the reverse. How do you select from so many offerings and so much noise in statements? And, you know, I think I'm going to mention it, and it'll be in your show notes, but there's an incredible resource called Elion, in an Elion Health IT Marketplace, and they're really presenting almost weekly updates on the new technology options, whether it's AI tools for historic QA, or for real-time assistance, or for industry-specific healthcare analysis, trend analysis, like Authentics, or Observe AI for QA, 100% first pass QA, you know, those type of tools. But again, that's part of the exciting arc of history, even with the CRMs and the cloud-based telephony. I want to spend some time on the CityBlock Health story starting in New York City.
I think that'd be a great transition. I mean, I think we're seeing this, you know, this very interesting timeline of technology. I mean, we're building this healthcare tech, but the reality was our support tools as support leaders, experience leaders, didn't really match, because we're dealing with PHI, we're dealing with PII. We've got to have that HIPAA compliance if we don't want to be the next front page newspaper story tomorrow. And so seeing a lot of these companies, Zendesk included, Intercom included, finally start to go, oh my gosh, this space is exploding. We best be able to get in here and compete with Salesforce Service Cloud, because it, as you mentioned, at that point, we were all kind of stuck with Salesforce Service Cloud for a long time, which is a very powerful tool, but it's incredibly expensive to implement. It's incredibly expensive to maintain. And so it's been an interesting experience over, I think, the last about 10 years, really having a lot more options. Let's zero in then on the experience with CityBlock Health. I think that'll be a great segue into more modern time.
Yes. And one more little point on that. Not even those players, but now the add-ons that you tack on for QA or for workforce management, et cetera, now it's so prevalent that you probably have an online BAA that you can, you know, usually like, are we going to do it with our lawyers and our paper? Is it going to be yours? And it went back and forth. And it's not like, if you ask now and you have a BAA, you can take care of that in a few keystrokes.
So, absolutely. And it changes that experience so much. I think it is now becoming rarer to me to encounter a vendor that doesn't have that available to me than it was even 5 years ago. So I've been very happy to see that change for the healthcare tech industry, for sure.
So I think the next step, I'll start the beginning of this story. It won't have any revolutionary next generation tech, but it will show you how vital tech was. I joined CityBlock in 2019, moved from San Francisco to Brooklyn. My wife and I moved 29 times over our 30 years of marriage. That move was the biggest ask to leave from San Francisco to Brooklyn, where she's never been. But I just felt when they reached out that this was important. Of course, we all didn't know that just a few months later, COVID was going to take the country. We were not knowing that. I consider it, even though this might not be the right definition, kind of moral luck, because we were working with marginalized Medicaid members in inner city areas as a starting point. We had traditional clinics at City Block, starting in Crown Heights in Brooklyn, and we offered full wraparound services that included primary care, behavioral health, social determinants of health, dietitians, a whole wraparound element that now is, you know, of course, has so much traction. And we were offering it to those most in need. Our client was Emblem Health Plan of New York. So they took this big chance on us, and we took a big chance because we were at full risk for basically taking huge attributions of their members in these inner city areas and improving their health outcomes. And if we could improve those health outcomes and also come in under that annual allotment of money they had given us, then we got to keep the difference. And first, before COVID, one of the existential questions at City Block was, what is the real acuity of our patient base? And can we increase quality outcomes? But to survive existentially, to survive as a company and to scale, which usually community health can't go beyond the community, can we basically increase panel size, increase quality, and reduce cost to make this business work for more in need? The clinicians, of course, had the heavy work. They're studying their algorithms. They're going through case by case with those assigned to the members to study the acuity. But concurrently, since we had just stood up again Zendesk and Talkdesk, which they had never had before, their clinics were broken. We started that stand-up because we found out through data analysis that 100 work mobile phones that had been given out using AT&T data, the calls were getting into rabbit holes. Members that were trying to reach their social worker to get the primary care or the nurse were not getting to a human being. The same with previous iterations of telephony. As most startups, they might have had RingCentral here and Dialpad there. And so there were a lot of numbers that were not maintained anymore. So we stood up Enterprise, we centralized operations, getting ready for other states to roll out. But we went to New York because of state market delays and before COVID, and we said, you know, I visited the clinics and I said, we have enterprise technology. Your 30% of your members are not getting to their health team. At least let us play air traffic control. We'll just repoint all of those numbers, whether they're working or not, toward one number. We'll train our team to just do air traffic control. We'll give you ticketing that you've never had before so you can see intraday touch points to earn your trust, and then we'll work on the more complex. So we won their trust before COVID on just air traffic control because we had Talkdesk and Zendesk. We were hiring at the same time to create a virtual line of business. So my team actually, which was a wonderful experience, I was helping interview and hire and train RNs, nurse practitioners, behavioral therapists, primary care physicians, psychiatrists. They were all part of our pods we were creating. So City Block leadership came and said, we're working on the quality elements, health clinical elements, but we have pod leads that are saying we cannot stretch our panels from 30 or 40 to 60 or 70. It will cause a drop in quality. So we complemented their data with looking at pod by pod that we'd put on Talkdesk for the virtual care starting point because they could be handed off to physical clinics. And we found out that many were saying, back to my earlier point as an example, it takes for material clinical outcomes 50 minutes average call duration for us to make a difference. And then others were saying, oh, I'm hitting my target numbers. I'm dialing 80 times a day. And so they would almost get false kudos like, wow, you know, they're performing. But what we really found is the one pod, their average handle time was around 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. They were setting the goals each week with those patient members and explaining to them they had other members to meet at the end of those 20, 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was something that they were both practices. They were doing smart lessons with them as far as how to, you know, do things in a timely way. Mm-hmm. So we found out average call duration could be 20 minutes. And we found out that some of the teams were only at 5 minutes, not 50 minutes. And they were getting a kind of a false measurement. And it wasn't material phone interaction. Mm-hmm. So we also complemented that with, this is just basics, we now had the tools to record in a virtual environment with teams that were not normally on call center tools. We telehealth teams, we could look at occupancy and utilization. Mm-hmm. And it came down to the pod that was able to hit the stretch goal. Mm-hmm. Their manager already had them queued up. They were logging into the 8 systems required 10 minutes, as they should have been, mm-hmm. before starting shift time.
Right. Yep.
Their breaks were 15 minutes as prescribed by schedule adherence. Yep. Their lunches were appropriate to that time. Mm-hmm. So if you pulled a printout of their sheet, and again, this is just basic call center things, but they hadn't had this element before, mm-hmm. you would see if you improve that intraday, mm-hmm. that occupancy and utility, and if you aim for that 20 minute without socialization that's not necessary, mm-hmm. we can serve more members and survive and move to New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, mm-hmm. North Carolina, mm-hmm. Ohio, et cetera, which has been the trajectory. Mm-hmm. So I maybe that's boring to some people, but I found that I loved working with that clinical ops audience and our members. It was in service of them. It was also reducing the burden on those clinical teams. Right. So we're using that base technology at CityBlock. I had approval from corporate to put AI on top of that. At the time, we were going to use Gong.io mm-hmm. that was developed for sales teams, mm-hmm. but it could be used for service teams to do 100% AI quick passive QA to mm-hmm. free up your QA humans for mm-hmm. higher order tasks.
Right.
At that time, and this has changed, it's one of the interesting things, we had a brilliant contact at Gong, West Point grad engineer, mm-hmm. knew the product left and right. Our product team was working with them at that time, 2019. They found out that Gong worked beautifully with Salesforce, but it couldn't work with Zendesk metadata. I'm sure that's been rectified since then because, you know, Zendesk is such a big player, but we had to put a pause on it. So mm-hmm. I didn't get to formalize my use of that. And so that's what I've been working on since then, is really my next goal is to join a company where the AI products, as I mentioned, for quality analysis and real-time agent assistance. And I'm a little still leery of this in the Gen AI world. The AI agent, if it's preferred by the end user, I think mm-hmm. we're probably almost there. So I just met, for instance, 2 weeks ago with a group called Spark CX at the Scottsdale Air Park here in Arizona. And it was one of the most futuristic meetings I've ever been at. First of all, I drive there as I'm pulling in, Gulfstream after Gulfstream is coming in over the McDowell Mountains and landing, just queuing up into Scottsdale Airport. Mm-hmm. I pull into there, they're sharing a space with this new generation, I think it's called Next Space, to where they're just using a space there, but they basically mm-hmm. offer spaces for companies. And you go in and, for instance, the conference rooms, they immediately, the full glass walls go to different levels of opacity, depending on what you want. The screens, which would be wonderful for support centers, especially in healthcare. Sure. You want to observe clients to see your teams, but you have to watch PHI and have pass card. He said, Mark, notice all the monitors while you're in here and then go outside. When you go outside, it's not just having to have that, you know, kind of kludgy layover screen mm-hmm. monitor. Once you're outside, you could have clients there, and without violating PHI, you're not seeing anything on any of the screens in the room. Sure. The acoustic settings immediately with different levels of nuance. You as a musician in your former life will appreciate that. The way they could adjust the nuance of acoustics for a meeting or for a live performer were incredible, but that's not their core product. That was just their space. Sure. They're a group that sort of defected from Amazon Connect, which is their big differentiator. They're using Gen AI to basically do analysis, trend analysis, coaching analysis, etc. But I think their differentiator is they understand with Amazon, Connect, that they can scale at just the flip of a switch, or even not requiring the flip of a switch, just based on spike indicators. Mm-hmm. Also, too, when I mentioned something about a current group I was helping with licensing issues, they smiled and they said, that's another component that's very simple here. Yeah. We basically, you're not tied into a peak or valley licensing structure. You're basically, it's usage-based, but at a cost-effective usage-based, because we all know that there were BPO, for instance, call centers, where if you were on a per minute, once you scaled, you wanted to actually go to dedicated FTEs. You didn't want to stay on a per minute because it didn't make the economics didn't work, but now they've kind of flipped it back to where you can use their, on demand, and it just automatically ramps, basically similar to what you can do on Cyber Monday, as far as international scale, instead of millions, billions. I'm tracking them. I'm meeting with them again. Very interested in a similar subject is BPO evolution. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something relevant to this conversation.
Absolutely.
Very excited by groups like Hero Partner. I've met with them a couple of times, and they've done something really cool. Two things. They have a flex program, which I would always ask about when I was at small startups. Mm-hmm. And way back when you went to a BPO, that's another thing that changed. Before, it was only Salesforce and it was expensive. Before, it was ACS like I was at, or some of the other big players. They wouldn't even talk to a startup if you couldn't book 100 FTE. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. They would just say, try this, and the technology at the other options wasn't there at the time. Mm-hmm. And so now you have BPOs like Partner Hero. Not only do they have these flex hours where you can go as a startup as low as 40 hours, and it's not in a block. Mm-hmm. You can use 3 hours at Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m., 10 hours on Wednesday intraday during main overflow hours, and then go up from there. And then I remember just a few years ago asking a BPO that we were going to do a pilot with when I was at Suki AI, a medical transcription AI company. Another darling that's growing rapidly. But at that time, I asked a US BPO, and they said, again, we're not using AI for our QA because it would reduce our billable FTE headcount. I was shocked that they would say that. Well, now Partner Hero is making it quite transparent that they have a augmented AI tool that if you can't afford and you don't want the implementation time, that's there as part of the package. I mean, it's an add-on, but I just think those are exciting for smaller companies as well as large companies.
Yeah, absolutely. Just kind of thinking towards, our times now is we have so many healthcare tech companies that are popping up. I mean, and every day we see a new one pop up, and every day we probably see two shut down. I mean, it's just a constant growth. I would love to hear your thoughts on how these companies can take this modern technology that we've been talking about and start utilizing that to drive value for their employees, for their support teams, for their customers. I'd love to hear more about that.
So, I think, again, this would really sound old school, but we've done it at very savvy companies. When we first start, I'm a big advocate of even not doing a basic IVR, of getting a human being that's reaching out, either in chat or especially phone, to a human being for your best learning opportunity. Mm-hmm. Is for as long as you can do that, to just experiment mm-hmm. and learn firsthand from that voice mm-hmm. or chat exchange that's a live performance, and then make your decisions about automation and, I don't even like this word, but the appropriate quality deflection to the right mm-hmm. channel. Sure. So I think some of these tools, number one, there's a more sophisticated, for healthcare tech companies, and probably most, mm-hmm. there's a more sophisticated, even entry-level employee now, mm-hmm. and it allows them to utilize that in a conversational manner instead of scripted. Let's look at the evolution. Mm-hmm. Just a few years ago, a lot of small and enterprise support teams would not allow, they would basically lock down and not allow Google searches for their agents to do their job. Mm-hmm. I think now we've broken down that barrier in many cases to where, you know, a remote patient monitoring company that does chronic care management, like I worked at MyNurseAI, we said yes, because at that time, our health coaches were also having to troubleshoot remote mm-hmm. devices. So of course they should be able to get on Google instead of having to build a separate SOP. And right. if there's a manufacturer video and knowledge base article on how to use this trace blood pressure cup and mm-hmm. what error codes mean that they can pull up in seconds mm-hmm. and share coaching with the patient real time mm-hmm. without having to drop off and even send them that resource. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's stage one. But a lot of companies were very reluctant to open that up. I think we're seeing a similar concern, especially in healthcare support with AI tools and ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. But again, I was able as a senior manager to get on the lines and actually answer some support questions. And I would type it into ChatGPT mm-hmm. and, you know, of course, vet it and compare sure. it against some other resources and find answers to individuals that, you know, you just launched with a smart ring and you didn't have your knowledge base article and your SOP was still being built. So sure. you're going out and you're finding something and you're seeing if it works and experimenting. Mm-hmm. And then you can build the larger SOP internally mm-hmm. and you can and I think what the AI tools are making faster is you can draft those SOPs mm-hmm. with the tools faster. You can fragment those into usable real-time answers faster. Even before you buy the pure formalized product, you can do things like use the initial Gemini tool, for example, mm-hmm. and just have it scan all of your PDF SOPs and have your questions ask individual fragmented answers and get it, you know, mm-hmm. instantaneously. So sure. that's a CX improvement for the member real time without a warm transfer or a callback ping pong. It's actually a reduction in FTE because mm-hmm. of the speed it's done. So that's just one area, because we have that first level to where it's used as a QA tool. Mm-hmm. It's used as a real time assistant. But mm-hmm. even before it's formalized, there's a technology out there that's can be used in a learning manner and create a better CX experience.
Absolutely. I think the more we can equip our folks, especially very early on, to go be curious, to go yeah. be self-starters and not block that path. I mean, set some guidelines, give some boundaries, make sure that we're being wise in what we're doing, but not restricting folks and letting them go find solutions to problems will derive incredible value and incredible growth from a support team. So I'm very much aligned with you there.
I use the term empathy with agency, and I think that adds to what you were just saying, because we've all had the customer service rep to where you know right away by the tone and pace, they are not going to answer my question. And it's very scripted. So, okay, let's move away. And we've got a better generation to where they're allowed. They've got conversational guidelines that they've been trained on, and they're conversational and they're super cheery and they're saying they're going to do the moon. They're basically overpromising.
Yeah, I think that concept of empathy with agency is incredible, because we have seen a lot of support teams, I feel like, that have grown that empathy muscle, but there's no ability for them to go do the right things that they need to do. And I'm certainly happy from a human experience standpoint for customer support teams to have a better experience and customers to have a better experience just in terms of a positive human interaction, but and then equipping them to go and actually solve the problem. I mean, that's a two-for-one win right there for a customer reaching out needing help. Well, Mark, as we wrap up this conversation, I'd love to hear any closing thoughts you have. I know earlier we had talked about one resource. I think you may have some additional ones you might be interested in sharing. Would love to hear about those.
And I'm not sponsored by any of these people. I kind of peppered it already, insinuated in a lot of the people that really keep me excited. So I'll give you the links to this that you can publish, the Elion Health IT Marketplace. They have everything from IT products, like we've been talking about, comparisons and pricing, two webinars with brilliant panel. I was on one, that one wasn't brilliant, but with people like Claire Fry, who was at Oscar, and now she's with one of the redesign spin-ups right now with her and the host, Bobby Gerlich, going through call center one-on-one. I think another one is a cool group. Have you ever listened or read any of the postings by Danielle Poray? I'm probably mispronouncing her last name. It's P-O-R-E-H. She has her PhD in engineering from UC Berkeley, and she's got this podcast and website called Out of Pocket Health. And she has this incredible sense of humor, and she is really tackling a lot of the call center healthcare scenarios with cogent, you know, aspects and guests. So her site is worth a look. We already mentioned this customer service CS Labs. It's Sophie Conti has been running. They just had their 10th anniversary. I love those, and I love to take young managers to it because it really shows a small boutique type gathering, because they're not big events. They deliberately keep them curated. But it shows the professional level that you can stay in customer service for your whole career.
Right.
And there is that upward trajectory. So I love that. So I'll give you up more of the resources. But yeah, please those do. Are some that stand out.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep those down in the show notes as well for those listening. And then the last question for you, Mark, if folks wanted to hear more from you, connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. Very simple. I think I got my Gmail account in 2004. So it's mark.hollis@gmail.com.
Awesome.
And on LinkedIn.
I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes as well so folks can connect with you easy there. Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us here at the table for this conversation. I think this idea of being able to see this huge expanse of time of healthcare tech and how support teams have fit inside of that and driven growth in that has been a really interesting thing. So thanks for taking the time and sharing your thoughts and experience with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to the Table Service Podcast. You can learn more about today's guest in the show notes below. Table Service is presented by Tavolo Consulting, hosted by Jordan Hooker. Music by Epidemic Sound.